Yo, what's the heavy hitter, DJ Wala, and you're now plugged into the Subject Thread Podcast with your host, Nyla Lavelle.
Like, there are certain people that have these ability to be independent contractors, self-employed, day traders, real estate investors, singers, artists, those type of people. Avenues within the real estate umbrella, because there's so many different ways to make money in real estate. I think a lot of people miss that.
Right, right. And that's very true, because when you say real estate, that's the umbrella, right? That's what, and then there's so many other strategies. So real quick, what I'll do for our listeners is explain a little bit about what wholesaling real estate is.
I like that question, because I was just talking about this yesterday, and I feel like with Kanye, he's like, he does things that we all do behind closed doors.
Yeah, I've never been asked that.
This is Subject Thread Podcast. We different here.
You are now tuned in to Subject Thread Podcast, giving you real dose of storyboard conversations, art, money, culture, and more.
Hey guys, what is up? What is up? This is your girl in the building, Nyla Lavelle, for another episode of Subject Thread Podcast. And I'm super excited to speak to this amazing creative artist. Miss Lynn Lucian is in the building with us. Hey, what is up?
Nothing, not much. Thank you for the introduction.
Awesome, awesome. I was just saying to her, she's prompt, she's on time. So this is going to be a good one, guys. I can already tell. So how is it being a creative and being such a prompt person? So I'm already seeing that you have that attribute part of you.
I mean, I work in a newsroom, so it's kind of like beat into me, like things have to be on time. You can't be late for things.
You're right about that. When you're in journalism, right?
I am. That's what I do as a day job. And then I like make my own illustration on my own time.
Wow. So you're in the media field and then you're creative. So take me to the place of when you decided you wanted to get into journalism. Let's start there first.
When I was about like 16, I applied to this journalism camp, I would say, at Princeton University. It was like this 10-day intensive. All I knew was that I wanted to learn more about journalism. I didn't really like know how I'd get into it or anything like that, because to take you even further back, I grew up in Haiti and moved to the United States when I was about 13, 14. So like first, like I didn't really know much about like politics from so many different angles. So I mostly applied to this program when I was 16, just to learn about like how to communicate and how to like understand and also be in news, because I've seen news in so many different spectrums, whether it's from like a third world country to what I'm seeing on like trying to understand like BBC news versus American news. It's all very like siloed, I feel like. So When I was 16, I was like, I need to learn what this all means, because getting information, it's all different. Like, why is it different? Why is there no objective truth that's consistent throughout all these platforms? So I had a lot of questions.
No, that's understandable. You said something that really struck out to me about London BBC news. You're absolutely accurate about that. Because when my mom was there for a couple of months touring, because she would sing, she said that everything in the UK was like brunt. It's totally different from, you know, American culture back then, because things have changed. And now American culture with the news is some outlets be out there.
Yeah.
So you've noticed that as well.
Yeah. I mean, how can you read the same news in three different places and have it be completely different? Like, ultimately, I don't believe that there's like objective news. You just kind of have to just like clear the noise and try to find the information you're looking for sometimes.
So since journalism is like a huge spectrum, you can kind of like be in any different kind of part. What parts do you like the most about it, and what is your field goals?
Yeah. So I'm more of I'm a photo editor. And okay. I got into like journalism after college because I really wanted to get into like creative photography field. And journalism was like the first place that I kind of got my foot in the door. But before that, I was mostly into like fine arts and like learning about like Black artists that no one talks about, like just carving my own path and understanding art. Journalism was basically like the the job, but I needed
to
support that interest. But I work in photojournalism. I think it's incredibly interesting how images have such power. It's like kind of the first impression that you get before you even read a story. And I remember like during years ago with the murder of Trayvon Martin and just kind of seeing how different media outlets immediately chose to run that photo of him with the hoodie. And I was like, there's like so much bias, even in the image that you choose. Like, what are you trying to say by this selection of this photo when there were so many others? And it's also who's pulling the photo too. So it's like, is this image empowering to Black people because someone Black chose it? Or is it the bias lies in how people portray Blackness? And I think that kind of, I've dealt with that my entire career, and just like trying to present people with dignity. And like, even if it's like, this is a little like much, but even if it's someone who's passed, how do we show that? And I think now there's been like this reckoning and we're really thinking about that. But before, I just feel like it was like, this is the stereotype, let's put it out.
Yeah, you're definitely hitting on some things that are making probably a lot of our listeners already think. And you said something amazing as well. So we're going to speak to that education. If you don't know, and if you've been under a rock, guys, Princeton is like a very prestigious school out of New Jersey. And you have to kind of like be a good student to go there. So you just skip that whole part because...
Oh, I didn't study at Princeton. I just did the journalism program. I went to this tiny little school called Bowdoin in Maine. It's like very small.
Okay, so you're all up in the East Coast. So you were all the way in Maine. How was that as a person of color? Look, you took me back. How is that? Are people of color up there?
I'll just say it's the whitest state in the United States. It is.
I mean, and I'm not to sound funny, but I had to ask that. When you think about Maine, it's like up there, and I'm sure the winters were like atrocious.
They were brutal. Yeah. All I gotta say is that I never even visited the college before I went. My parents, being an immigrant, my parents were like, go to the best school you could get into.
I
just went the day that I got in. Like, I didn't go for social. I was like, and then I realized how much of an impact it has to like be somewhere where there's people who look like you and stuff like that. I mean, I had a good experience there, but that was definitely lacking for sure.
Okay, I got you. If you could have done it again, do you think you would have probably went to like maybe a HBCU or something like that?
It's hard to say. I think that I would have loved to have gone to Howard. I would have, but I think it was too far for me.
Okay.
I needed to be close to home, or like it was only 2 hours from Boston where I'm from. So it was a good fit for that stage of my life. For this stage of my life now, of course, I would definitely have been thrived there at Howard, I think.
I got you. No, I got you. It makes sense. So how did because it's like you already were surrounded by images and creativity already, which kind of falls under the umbrella of art. How did you get into illustration?
Well, it's kind of a convoluted answer because I'd been working in creative for so long. And throughout my career, I'd learned, taught myself, I'm completely self-taught, like how to draw, over the years, like little by little, and just kind of doing some illustrations, some collage work for the different companies I'd worked for. And then there's this kind of stage in my life where I kind of felt like I was being, that we were very misunderstood in the media. And I just kind of felt like the silencing. Because even when you're sitting in the newsroom, sometimes you're the only one who's Black. I've never worked with another Black photo editor. Only once when I was like my very first job, I had like a mentor who I only worked with for 6 months, but then never again. So it's oftentimes you're positioned in this, the like you have to speak on behalf of all Black people kind of thing. And that was sometimes that like is meant to be empowering, but sometimes you kind of feel like, oh, here we go again. And it makes you like retract into yourself versus being like, oh yeah, I am going to speak on behalf of all Black people. So when I got into illustration on like in terms of doing it for myself, it was kind of like finding my voice, finding where I belong in the space, because I wasn't the person who had to sit there and have the loudest bark in the newsroom. That's not comfortable for me.
Okay.
For me, I want to express myself in my own way. So when George Floyd was murdered, it's always something that's like so incredibly in, like, painful that kind of brings it on, or something so beautiful that like drives my passion. But I kind of felt like I didn't have a voice or power. So I sat down and I made this like insane illustration of just like Trump destroying like Black futures. It was metaphoric. It wasn't meant to be like painful or anything, but it had such a mixed, mostly support, but a lot of people were writing me and telling me that to keep doing it. But I don't want to make art that comes from pain. That's not my intent. That was just like a one-time thing, because mm-hmm. I want to make art that celebrates Blackness, not like feeds into this sort of disaster porn. Let's just keep digging into this pain, because I truly don't believe that's what Blackness is. We are beauty, we're light, we're vibrancy. So that's what I have done moving forward. I'm not really into this disaster porn narrative, but that specific illustration started it for me, because it was the first time where I felt like I could just say what I wanted to say directly. And through my illustration, it was like I found voice and I found self. So it wasn't until like during the pandemic, really, that I really started just making one after another consistently.
Wow. You just said a mouthful, but you are right. It's equivalent to when we watch movies about slavery. It's always a lot of slavery narratives that we get awards for, unfortunately.
Right.
I love the fact that you encompass every Black person pretty much in your vision of art. Like, you don't single anyone out. I love that fact. What is your driving motivation for that?
I honestly want to take control of Blackness, because I feel like for far too long it's been like belittled or painted in ways that we don't have autonomy over. I wanted to have autonomy over what Blackness means to me, and also like how putting my voice out there, that's another voice that is really highlighting how beautiful and powerful we are. And it's not like, I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves that of this resiliency that we have, and this the magic that's inside of us, because it gets like sort of overshadowed with all this like negative news. Like, I don't think that we're out here like causing all these negative things, or this narrative that horrible things deserve to happen to us. Like, that is just a lot. I think that a lot of that news sells and people will click it and
clickbait.
And so I just kind of feel like I don't like that way of painting people. So I want to really paint it from a way that I envision Blackness. And also I'm from Haiti. So like my entire upbringing was just being surrounded by Black people. And like, I grew up with my family telling me that I was great, that I could do great things. So that kind of like brainwashing wasn't there. Like, my doctor was Black, my teacher was Black. It was like, things felt possible to me. I didn't come here thinking like, oh, I have the weight of the world against me, even though people are so quick to say poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, put all these labels on our Blackness. I just feel like that weight of us realizing that we are beautiful and not listening to that negative of like representations of who we are is empowering for me.
That's amazing that you said that as well. And one thing that struck out to me is that you did come here as like a teenager. So you were able to see the richness in the culture of Haiti from what, 0 to 13 years old. I know that it was a culture shift coming here, because people think they have this misconception that America is just so beautiful for people of color, especially Black people. And it really isn't. So when did you really see that there's some things here?
Yeah. And I'm not saying that. I don't want to speak ill of America in that way. That's not what I'm trying to do. Because when I came to the United States, I saw the beauty in all the Black people I was around. And I just feel like what I was noticing, I went to inner city school in Boston. So basically 90% of people there were Black.
Okay.
And I saw this kind of like beauty and like in the way that they would just create things on the spot, or like just the creativity was just like fluid. It wasn't even like they'd had access to all these things in schools. It just came so naturally. And I connected with a lot of people from my high school, because I just was like, wow, like I see the similarities between us are like ocean can separate us, but we're all like beautiful people. But what I did notice is that some people had this kind of like weight on their shoulders that I I think I experienced differently. Mm-hmm. But when you're constantly being told that you're not great or you're not, like, that can bleed into you not believing in your greatness.
I gotcha.
And I think once a lot of my friends who are very successful today have leaned into this kind of like, no, we're taking autonomy of our own selves. That's where growth happens. And that's what I've been seeing this past decade. It's like Black people owning their own strength and autonomy, not just like being part of this narrative that is being fostered for us. Like, we need to make things that are for us by us.
Hey guys, what's up? This is your girl in the building, Nyla Lavelle. I'm sorry to have interrupted the podcast, but I want you guys to make sure that you're following us on Instagram and Twitter at Subject Thread. Instagram and Twitter. It helps with the algorithms. Thank you for the support for the 100,000 plus streams, and it's ongoing on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audible, Podchaser, Amazon Music, and more. Please continue on supporting us, independently owned, minority woman owned. I appreciate the support. Make sure to visit us online at subjectthreadpodcast.com.
Absolutely. And I like your postings as well. I mean, your art is absolutely phenomenal, but what makes you choose the quotes?
I think each one is different, but I ultimately just wanted to either encourage people or find quotes by Black people that are encouraging to us, and also find quotes that are encouraging to myself, because a lot of what I make is about me too. Mm-hmm. So it's like both an expression of self and also what I want to communicate to others.
Awesome. Awesome. How did the features come about in like the Daily Beast and New York Mag? Because that's huge.
Well, I work at both of those places, but New York Magazine is my day job. Like, I'm basically a masochist. So I work two full-time jobs. New York Magazine by day, Beast at night. New York Magazine, I'm a photo editor, so they still have to commission me.
I got you.
But I'd been posting, and the head of art saw my post, and she commissioned me to do those pieces.
Yeah.
It's a whole other department.
No, I know that. I mean, you can work for somebody, but they had to come over here and look at what's going on. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what is some of your favorite pieces that you have done? Like, three favorite pieces, and why?
I think the portrait of my sister is one of my favorite, because she's an artist. Her name is Laika Lucian. She's an artist herself, and she created this sticker platform where she was like, I need to find stickers, and I haven't found any of them that are inclusive, and I found her to be very inspiring, that she would go out, sit out, find this platform and figure out how to make it. So I just wanted to capture the vibrancy of who she is, not was. and so I like that, and it's not even anyone who knows her, but I think it kind of resonated with people. I also like the one that I did for New York Magazine about soup jumu, which is a soup that Haitians have.
Was just looking at that.
it's like an empowering story that we had this soup. It's a story of resiliency. And I don't think anybody really knew the story behind it, that we were the first Black country to gain independence, and we defeated the French and so many other countries. And then we had the soup to be like, eat a soup that the French told us we couldn't have. We had the soup on the first to fuel our bodies. And it was designed by this very intelligent, the first queen empress of Haiti. And then every first she would go into every town and have this soup and spread it across all the country while educating us about our history, that of our greatness. So I think that my pieces that I like the most are the where I get to tell a story about strength or someone's strength. And I also really like the cover art that I did for Billboard magazine. That was my very first big commission, and I was shocked. I was freaking out, because it was for the Versus battles, and those battles are pretty amazing. So I'm glad that I got to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. That is absolutely stunning.
Thank you.
No, absolutely. I'm over here in amazement. Now, Versus just did something very entrepreneurial wise. I don't know if you can speak to that, how you feel about that. But basically what Versus did, as an entrepreneur, I get it. I understand it. But as creatives, people are mixed. So what they did was what Jay-Z just basically did with Tidal. But it's a different kind of format. Tidal, Jay-Z just sold a major portion of Tidal for $297 million. And he'll still remain on the board, but he pretty much is done, you know, in regards to that project. Now, Timbaland and Swiss Beatz have done something similar. They have sold Versus to Thriller, and they're still going to be on the board, but they've also have given the first 43 people that have come on Tidal equity percentage into the new Versus. So you have a lot. So you have a lot of people that are extremely upset about this, that are creatives. And then you have people, another half, that are like, you know what, it's business. But they say that they feel like what's going to happen is the creativity and the blackness is going to go away from it. How do you feel about something like that?
I'm kind of torn when it comes to business, because I feel like other, like, what, just to be clear, white people are able to buy and sell businesses all the time. And like, we are held to a different standard. Like when we do that, like when I think Shea Moisture sold, or maybe I'm using the wrong company, please. I'm not sure which one it was, but it was a black hair company. And I was like, why aren't they allowed to sell? Why do we have to hold on? If we could maximize our earnings, why aren't we allowed to do that as well? Like I think like when it comes to business, it's not as linear. We could allow people to grow in different ways. But the only difference with this is that there's culture involved. So it's not just a product. But what from what I understand is that this would afford this to keep growing so that more people can have this platform. Because as soon as someone performs on Versus, all their music starts selling again. Their merch gets sold again. So I kind of hope that this continues to be like supporting artists of color and bringing them back to the table, but I'm also not going to hold it against them.
Okay. That's a great way to look at it, actually. I look at it like this. Someone else could have came up with the concept, you know, of Versus, and it could have been watered down, and they wouldn't be able to take it to another platform and make it really, really huge. So my hope is just like what you said. I hope that it will continue to give people of color another voice. Because I was listening to Monica and Brandy, and I think that they made like an additional $39,000 that week that they did Versus on their own streaming platforms. So it definitely does something for the artists when they go on there, personally.
Right.
Now, speaking of music, this is the fun part of the show. What is in your playlist right now?
My playlist is a hot mess. it's like everything from like Haitian music to like a lot of like 90s music, like anything by Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston. If it's a ballad or a duet, I'm listening to it. I don't think we do duets enough anymore.
No, we don't. We definitely don't.
Duets, they were so great. I'm the kind of person who works out to Whitney Houston or to some like Broadway like belting performance. Like if you're gonna like sing Sweet Nothings to me, I'm listening to it.
Okay. So we got Mariah and Whitney, which are amazing people. So I'm going to go with this question from Mariah Carey. What is your favorite song? Give me one that you can think of and why, and I'll give you one and why.
I feel like I've been listening to Save the Last Day on repeat like 100 times, just because also it has Lauryn Hill on it.
Okay.
So I'm going to choose that one.
You're going to choose that one. Okay. And it's because of, and your reasoning is for, because of the guest feature, Lauryn Hill?
Yeah, for both of them being on there. And also, I just love, it's got a 90s vibe. Like, it feels old school, but it's modern. But it's also like she still hits all the notes in it. It's pretty strong.
Okay, cool. Ooh, that's a good one. Actually, that's a good one. Lauryn Hill just, hey, shout out to Lauryn Hill for going diamond. The first
artist absolutely to have a
hip-hop album diamond. So great taste right there in music. I want to say my favorite is Make It Happen. That came out in like 92, 93. And that anthem on that song is amazing because she talks about her life. She talks about the things she went through. And I think a lot of people forget that Mariah Carey really has a story. So when she was able to capture that with that beat and then that sample, I think she did her thing on that.
I think She's an incredible storyteller, and we don't, yeah, like you said, we don't give her enough credit for that aspect. Like, and I, and she promotes to so many artists, like, own your own music. Like, she's been like almost a teacher for people to learn about the rights of their own. As someone who works in image rights, I'm like, you need to like own everything, every aspect of what you've made.
You just said something that struck out to me. Everything is going digital. And I wrote an article about that maybe last summer about just the cryptocurrency, the digital market in art, the digital market in real estate, investing, etc. What is your take on the new crypto and art?
Crypto and art?
Oh, you don't know about the
NFT? I don't think I'm familiar with that.
Really?
Are people selling their art via cryptocurrency?
Yes, it's a huge thing that's going
on. Oh my God.
NFT, actually. You got to look
into it.
Yeah, you go, because Mark Cuban, who's a billionaire and he owns the Dallas Mavericks, someone I love and I follow, he's talking about the NFT market, which I think is going to do something really huge for artists that are in that playing field. And basically, there's a whole marketplace now for cryptocurrency art. It's about to be the new thing and it's not going anywhere because we're now in the age of the digital era. Yeah, you got to look up NFTs. I'm getting schooled on it.
Do my research.
Like I'm getting schooled on it. I was watching an episode about this about 2 weeks ago because I watch Mark Cuban for cryptocurrency as it is, but then he's brought in the element of NFTs and people are like buying art for $65 million for digital art. That's the tokens and just a whole nother dynamic.
Yeah.
Whole other dynamic. So since you don't really know everything about it, how do you feel about being like, say, potentially having your art sold on a digital platform in the form of Bitcoin like that?
I'm down for it. If I can make money, absolutely. I think people will steal art, whether you put your name all over it. There's so many ways that you could steal art. So if there is another way that I can like make money, and like it's so hard for artists, like I shout out to Swiss Beatz, who started the Dean Collection, but he made this platform so that artists of color can have like can make money. There are artists who sell their paintings for $10 million and never see that money because it gets resold, rebought, and unlike music, you don't get to see like what do you call it when you get money?
Is it royalties?
Royalties. And I think he set up this organization so that there's some kind of money that you get every time it's sold, which I think is brilliant. But if they're changing the infrastructure of what it looks like to buy art, I'm down for it.
I agree with what you just stated. I think that it should be in royalty or residual infrastructure in terms of art. I'm not sure why that hasn't happened yet. They govern everything else, you know,
right.
they govern music, they're governing movies, you know,
yeah.
But I'm not sure why they haven't done the art aspect yet. I don't know if it's, maybe they think it's too hard to do it or et cetera, but you have people that are selling, you're right, paintings for that amount. And then, you know, you have Basquiat, who's no longer here, but his stuff, what did Jay-Z buy for like $400 million or something really weird like that it went for, which is nothing wrong with it, but it's like, how does the next person, are they able to do that as a person of color? So, a lot to think about. It's definitely a lot to think about. So what's next for you? What do you have going for 2021?
I have been just making different pieces for different companies now. I've like gotten a lot more like freelance and art gigs that I'm not really, I can't really talk about them until they're out. But
okay.
I'm just doing
more. Dang. No. Okay. So we definitely want to expect some more art from you from different
platforms. There's a lot more. And it's been like a crazy year. Like it just kind of blew up for me in a way that I didn't expect because it wasn't to be sold. Every time I made something, it just felt kind of like I was getting this frog out of my throat. So I'm glad that people can see the stuff that I make and they're like, respond to it positively. So I'm hoping that I can do that like more and more, as much as possible, because it's my true passion.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, my last question for you is, if there was anyone that you can freelance with and draw with, dead or alive, what artist would that be?
Ooh, it's a tough one. Really, really hard one. I'm going to say Jordan Castile. She does these amazing portraits. She's a an incredible painter. Incredible. I've been like obsessed with her since I moved to New York. She's just the best of the best. So everyone go check out her work.
Awesome. 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 Now, how do the people find you? Give out your website, social media.
Oh, so my website is my name, Lynn, L-Y-N-E, Lucien, L-U-C-I-N .com. And my Instagram handle is La Lucien. My name is so weird. It's L-A-L-U-C-I-E-N. That's my Instagram.
Okay, cool. You gave out your name so well, and it was pronounced so elegantly that I feel like, did I do it any justice in the beginning?
No, it's just like, it's like saying a name in different languages. I like to say my name in Creole, but it's really, as you said it, Lynn Lucien in English.
Okay, awesome. Guys, this has been an awesome conversation. Make sure you check her out and you follow her. And this is Subject Thread Podcast, and we are out. Peace out, guys.
Bye.